Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by Forever Family Foundation. On the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name. The echo is haunting. The echo is always the same. I call your name. The echo is haunting. An echo can never be changed. So I call your name.
Welcome to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. Tom and Melissa Gould are here. I'm here. I'm Bob Ginsberg. This is our gathering show. It's a discussion show. We would love for you to join in. Give us a call. And the number here is 888-627-6008. And by the way, we didn't have a lot of questions that came. We usually have a lot more. So if you want to join in with us, this is your chance because you'll get through. Again, the number here is 1-888-627-6008. How are you guys doing tonight?
Hey, Bob, we're doing well. It's great to be able to hang out with you again.
Yeah, well, you're lucky you weren't here today because it was like 92 degrees. It was hot.
Well, you're dressed warm. I'm wearing a sweater. We haven't caught up to that at all.
Yeah. Well, I heard in New York the other day you had a day that was like 80 degrees, right? Then it just kind of dropped right back down.
Yes. Yep. It goes back and forth one day. Today was 77. Tomorrow's 46. So.
Yeah, that's great. When I was in Boston, I think last weekend, and the temperature wasn't bad. But, you know, after living in Florida, temperatures like in the low 50s felt like the low 20s to me. It's amazing after living in New York all these years, you know, you spend a few years in Florida and your whole body chemistry changes. So we do have some questions that people had written in. Again, I have to put on my glasses for after this cataract surgery. Here's a question, I think, right up your alley. Jenny says, I heard that if I learn about chakras or Reiki, etc., I will raise my vibration and be better able to connect with my loved ones on the other side. Have any of you done this or know about this? Please share your thoughts. Well, yes, Jenny. And then, as a matter of fact, Tom and Melissa at our grief retreats do a little presentation on that. So I turn it over to you.
You're the Reiki person. So,
Well, I have only reached level 2 Reiki, not mastery level 3. But I definitely feel that the application of Reiki on one can certainly raise your vibration. And anytime we raise our vibration, we're definitely increasing our chances of being able to communicate with our loved ones on the other side. And at our retreats, as Bob mentioned, Tom, you're always talking about the chakras and how those energy, spinning energy cycles along our spine really do activate things.
Yeah, there are many energy centers. If you are into acupuncture, as I am, there are hundreds around your body that you can access with the acupuncture needles. But there are 7 major energy centers in the body that correspond with the chakras, that they call. And each energy center does have different purposes, and when you get up into your higher chakras, particularly the third eye, the indigo, that is where communication can happen. So if you can meditate and get those chakras open, you will have a better chance of opening communications. Many people know that the chakras have a color coordinated that correspond with the colors of the rainbow. What a lot of people don't know is that there's also a sound that goes with each chakra, and it's basically an U-O-A-I-A-E. And if you chant that over and over again, that will definitely raise your vibrations. So there's a lot you can do to enhance the experience and try to open the lines of communication.
You know, that's something we haven't tried on that panda drum we got, or have you?
No.
With those sounds, that might be helpful too. I do know, Bob, when we talk about, and you know, people always think we talk about meditation a lot and they groan because nobody wants to think about having to sit in silence for a great period of time. It's difficult, but you really can achieve some of these benefits just with 5 minutes a day, just 5 minutes sitting quietly. And I do recall when I put myself through, you know, like a concentrated 30-day period of 5 minutes a day, and I chose around the same time each day, I definitely started to feel a pull in my sacral chakra. And, you know, looking up what each, I know we go over it at our retreats, but reviewing what each one meant, I felt like that really was the connection to the spirit and where we came from. And so I thought, wow, this really is working. So people should hopefully, you know, if interested, try it.
Okay. Well, that's great. Thanks, Jenny. Hope that answers your question. Let's go to a caller. We have Carissa from Minnesota.
Hi.
Hi, how are you, Carissa?
I'm well, thank you for asking. How are you?
Okay. I know you had a question about signs.
Yes, I am. My question would be, as we think about trying to connect with very specific spirits who have crossed, how can we try to interpret signs that might be specifically from them versus other spirits who have crossed?
That's interesting. I know sometimes people, and by the way, hi, Chris, thanks for calling in. I know that often we hear people have made an agreement with their loved ones prior to passing, and that then they hope that will be the sign that they know that it is their loved one in spirit. But I think it's perhaps more about the feeling you get or the thoughts that come to your mind when you recognize a sign that will help you determine who it's from. I can imagine that might be difficult if you have a lot of loved ones on the other side, but you know, depending on what that sign is, it might just lead you to think of a specific person, and I would go with that initial gut feeling. What do you think?
Yeah, I'd also, when you see a sign, step back a second and say, well, what was I thinking about at the time? Because I have certainly have gotten, I thought about my mom, and then I got a sign, and I go, oh, well, that must have been from my mom, that kind of thing. You know, you get into the car, you're thinking about somebody, and you turn on the radio, and it's their favorite song. Or, you know, the old, I haven't thought about somebody in years, and you think about them, and then you get a phone call or a text from them. So what your leads up to the sign is also a good indicator. But Melissa's actually right. You get a... When you get a communication from a loved one, there is a knowing that's like, is that you? I mean, you do question it. Of course, you're going to question it. But you, 9 times out of 10, when you say, is that you? Yes, it was them.
Yeah. And yeah, it's good advice. And also, it's not all that dissimilar from a medium reading. Like in a medium reading, the medium is giving you information that's specific to your loved one. And because the question was also, how do you differentiate the sign, you know, as coming from that person? So the person in spirit is going to give you evidence. So in this case, the person is trying to give you evidence directly as opposed to through a third party, through a medium. So if you were, you know, for instance, your loved one was born in 1962 and you see a penny in the street and you pick it up and it says 1962, your loved one's name, was Charles, and you look up and a license plate goes by that says Charles, so things that are, they're pretty inventive that way too. They'll give you things that can only apply, to them for the most part. So I hope that gives you some insight to your question.
Yes, thank you. Thank you
Okay.
all.
Okay. Thank you. Have a good evening. So we have a question here. I don't know. It sounds a little familiar, but I don't think we answered this particular question from Carol. She said, my 40-year-old son Kyle passed suddenly in May 2020. For the first couple of years, he bombarded me, my husband, his girlfriend, sister, and a cousin with amazing signs. His girlfriend and I received the most, but lately they dropped off considerably. Last year, close to his angelversary, I said to him, Kyle, I haven't heard from you in a while. I know something on or near your angelversary. How about a big Kyle sign? That would make me so happy. I was thinking and hoping he would send a butterfly or maybe a coin. But a couple of days after I asked for a big Kyle sign, I was turning right out of our court, and to my shock and amazement, this is what I saw. And she attached a photo. It was literally a big sign that said Kyle. So I guess that's a big Kyle sign, literally. She said that was one of the last ADCs I received. So my questions, should I just accept that he's okay and busy and wants me to move on with my life?
Yes. Yes. That's exactly what she should envision. And not, she has had her validation, and we know our loved ones in spirit are all right. I say we believers know that, and I hope that can give other people comfort too.
Yeah, and she also said, if I still want to connect with him often, are there ways to do this? He always comes through loud and clear to mediums. I've also heard of automatic writing. Anything else? It sounds like you're doing the right things if considering the signs that you've gotten, and he's coming through loud and clear to mediums, automatic writing. It's kind of difficult for non-mediums to do it. It's even difficult for mediums to do it. Matter of fact, I don't. A few of our mediums say that they've done it, but in years past, for those listeners that don't know anything about automatic writing, people were able to think of their loved one in spirit, put a pen or a pencil in their hand, have a pad of paper, and just put the pen on the paper and let spirit write. In other words, you're not writing, the spirit energy is writing. And sometimes it's quite amazing. I haven't witnessed anybody doing it, but I've sure read a lot of about people who could do it. I think we mentioned last time we were talking about autistic savants that there was a savant named Kim Peek who could take two books, put one on his left side and one on his right side, and read the book on his left with his left eye, and simultaneously read the book on his right with his right eye,
Wow.
and retain all of it. That to me,
Remarkable.
is just, and I believe in a lot of things, but that is just so incredible,
Talking about the, we used to, when we were first, gosh, 20 more or more years ago, first meeting and exploring all of these techniques. With the automatic writing, it's been a while since I have reviewed that. Did we also hear that it's often good to try holding the writing tool in your non-dominant hand
Yes.
so that it's, it's kind of not you, it's more coming from
Yeah, I think that's what, Bill Donahue talks about that in his left right brain, talk. So, Yeah, I mean, it's really difficult if we were to try it, not to, you sort of have to let yourself go, right? It's like you don't even exist. So have you ever tried it, Melissa?
Yes, I have, and that's why I'm trying to. I not with success. Nothing I ever wanted to, announce to anybody. Wow, this really works. I do know that I feel I communicate. I would say with my parents, my mom and my dad, when I have a question, not as something lengthy that needs a lengthy response, but just a simple question, and I always feel on my left side, like just kind of in this area under my left ear by my cheek, but yet it's in my head, a response, but as if it's coming from this side of my body. And it would just be something simple. Often when I've lost something and I can't find it, or trying to recall something, and I get that sensation. So I just kind of trust it and go with it and let that be my communication with them.
That's interesting. I mean, during football season, Tom asked me to try automatic writing, and then I looked at the paper and it said, "Bet the Jets."
Yeah.
So that was the last time I did automatic writing.
I used to take my mom to a lot of mediums after my dad had passed, and the one medium looked up at me and said, "Oh, do you ever do automatic writing?" And I said, "No, not really." And she said, "Well, I get in the sense that you can do that, but I've never pursued it. I always figured that my songwriting was kind of a form of automatic writing, and maybe that's what she was referring to. But yeah, as far as the question, what else can you do to help communication? Trying automatic writing is one thing. Experimenting with EVP, trying to get a recording on a staticky channel. There's actually some we've seen a little bit on the YouTube. There's a device now, a spirit box, which can enhance the automatic writing. I won't recommend that at this point, but we are going to look into it, and we'll certainly report back to you if we get any success in that regard.
And I like to use my pendulum, but I if anyone is listening that doesn't know what I'm talking about, it's really that, like, even just the necklace I'm wearing, if I took unclasped it and just put the charm at the end of the chain and ask a question and first determine which direction is yes and which direction is no. For me, it's sort of a vertical out from my body for yes and horizontally for no, and asking a question that way. But I treasure that ability and trust my pendulum method so much that I'm actually reluctant to use that method too often, because I don't, I guess I trusted it so much, and if it turned out not to be giving me the correct answer, I'd be devastated. But when it's something that isn't critically important, I've tried it. And Tom recalls the number of times our friends, our generation, our friends are starting to have grandchildren, and when one of them says, "Oh, I hope it's going to be a boy," and I go and ask my pendulum, and it says it's a girl, and I write down the notation. I don't tell my friend ahead of time, but after the fact, months later, I can show them, "Yeah, on this date when you told me that." Well, but that's just sort of, for fun, for my own enjoyment.
And
You
another
know,
thing that I got to witness once is the what they call table tilting, where people sit around the table and just put a little just resting their fingertips on the table, and I've seen where spirit comes through and they ask questions, and if it's a yes, the table will shake, and if it's no, nothing will happen, and there's communication that way. And I have also seen YouTube that you can do this for yourself. I've never We've tried it. We tried to do some table tipping here at home, the two of us, and have not had any success with that. And I might add that the night that I saw the table tilting happen, it took about 45 minutes of sitting at the table before anything at all happened.
Right.
And so that's a hit or miss. But these are ways, if you really want to explore, there are different ways you can go.
You know, I was thinking, Melissa, when you said that you often get a sensation on your left side, like on your neck, sort of. A lot of the mediums over the years have said that they also, that spirit comes through on one particular side. And, you know, I never quite understood how that would work, you know, I mean, if, when thought transmission is coming through. But it's not the first time I've heard that, you know, so maybe
Interesting.
one day we'll figure that out.
I know. I don't know. I mean, is it the left brain, right brain thing again?
I don't know. I don't know. When you
I'm
find out, let me know.
not. I will.
Let's see. We've got, Jane writes, I've known some truly nasty, ugly people in my life. People who have no compassion and no problem hurting others. What happens to them?
I can tell you my speculation.
Okay.
All right, my speculation is that, like the rest of us, they have a life review when they pass, and they are the only ones judging themselves and their actions. And I was recently looking into that a little bit more and learned that not only are they only judging themselves, but they may have a guide there with them, sort of for, I would guess, support. I would like to say emotionally, which is a physical term, but to help them see the error of their ways and help them recognize where they went wrong and how they can do better. And I feel that in, we've often brought up the instances where a medium starts to bring through somebody and the sitter will say, oh, they were horrible. I do not want to hear from them. But if they have the empathy and patience and, you know, loving compassion for that person and can help them on their journey by listening to them and forgiving them, that helps both you and the deceased loved one. I think I don't know whether I strayed from the question, but I think that the person who's behaving that way in this physical world probably will be coming around again after they pass in another form. I know we talk about reincarnation often and haven't, obviously, we don't know exactly how it all works, but it sort of seems to make sense that if we're here to learn and to grow, if we complete this life cycle and we haven't learned those aspects of ourselves or developed them, we probably will come back again in another form as an opportunity to work on those and do better. I'm making it sound like a choice. I that kind of think it is. I kind of think when you get to the other side and you've had this life review and you see how you treated people and you feel it back yourself, they say you feel it back 10 or 100 times more, that you want to repent and you do better so that you can elevate on the other side. And what's the other term? When you elevate on the other side, you get the reach the higher
Well, there are
realm.
higher, there are levels. It's not just this side or that side. There is this level, and then you go up to another level, but there are other levels even higher that you can achieve once you get over there. And a few things. Melissa mentioned that in those readings, when somebody comes through and the sitter says, "I don't want to talk to him. He was a horrible person." invariably that person is coming through in the reading to apologize for being that way. So there is a self-reflection that goes on. As Melissa says, you get a life review where the things you've done to other people that cause harm, you feel that harm that you caused to other people. So you want to make amends for that. There's a book we mention often called Testimony of Light. And in one part of that book, there was a person who was a very bad person on this planet. And when they got over to the area with the Testimony of Light on the other side, they basically were in a dark room and had to deal with their horrible experience. So if you're over on the other side and you see all this light and beauty and color and love and all of that, and you go have to go into this dark room, well, you're going to want to say, how can I get to that spot? And it's a learning process. The learning doesn't stop when our lives, physical lives end.
And that wasn't it in that example, that person in the dark room could leave. They weren't locked in, but they were too much in their own negativity to even find their way out until they were able to, you know, reach this peaceful state of mind that they could figure it out, probably with help, because helpers were mentioned also in that book, that the guides that come and help you see the path.
Yeah, what's the question that people ask all the time? Because we live in a world where, you know, there's justice for things. We want to think that there's justice here and also there's justice there, afterlife justice, you know. So why should people want to know that, you know, the miserable people don't go to the same place that they go to? And, I mean, you guys did a good job of describing it. It's not the classic religious concept of heaven and hell. It's based on self-judgment. But we think that people initially are with other people of like mind, you know, and like deeds in this physical world. So in a sense, that's a form of justice, I guess. But as you point out, it's not a prison, you know. I mean, it's people learn and grow and work towards that enlightenment eventually that, you know, you're talking about. So,
you know, when you mentioned religion, Tom, sure, yesterday we went to a funeral for a friend's brother, and they were Catholic, and we weren't in a church, we were in a funeral parlor, but a priest came in from a local church here where we live and spoke to everyone in the sanctuary of the funeral parlor. And Tom and I were both struck by the messages or information he was sharing. Tom and I were not raised you were more than I, but I wasn't raised with a strong religious background that had all the, I guess I want to call them rules or what you're to believe in. But when this priest spoke, what touched you, Tom, about that?
Well, I was, you know, we've always heard and often heard that when we bring up our talk of paranormal and the afterlife and communicating with spirits, we get a lot of the, oh, no, you can't do that. That's anti-Catholic. And yet this priest, when he was giving his message, he could have been standing at one of our retreats giving the message that we give every time. He was talking about how you will see the person again, how they will be around you, all of what we talk about and believe is part of what this priest was saying. So it's and ultimately what we come back to is it's not the religion. I mean, if you go to the very core of the religion, which is the philosophy from the prophets, It's exactly what we're talking about. It's when the dogma of religion, and as Melissa said, the, you know, the rules and the regulations and all the man-made icons and golden this and all of that, that's not what the message is for religion. So we're basically talking the same religions or the same message with just different clothing.
Exactly. Let's see, we have, after my loss, my friend told me that my grief would get better after the first year. I waited and wished for that to happen, but it didn't. What's your experience? You know, my feeling is that we do ourselves a disservice by trying to adhere to some timeline when it comes to grief. You know, there is no timeline. You know, maybe your friend did feel better after a year, and that's great. But we shouldn't put limits on ourselves and, or limitations and go with it. I mean, you agree with that, Melissa?
Yeah, and I know that in the grief groups and workshops that I participate in, it comes up time and time again that the second year is the hardest one. Right. I've been meeting regularly with a close friend and neighbor of mine who lost her husband. It's now just a little over a year ago. And we get together often just to, you know, talk and meet and sort through that, all that she's been going through. And it is now just past the anniversary of his passing. And she is ready to host Easter celebration at her home again. So I thought that was lovely that she felt ready to do that again. But often I hear it's, you know, it, like you said, that there's no timeline. Everybody is different.
Yeah.
I always say at the our grief retreats is that we grieve because we love. If you didn't love the person, you wouldn't be grieving them. So ask yourself, are you going to stop loving them? And of course you're not. You're going to love them until you meet up with them again and even past that. So grief, you will live with that grief, but what we say is, yes, you will still grieve, but it doesn't have to hurt so badly. And that's where we focus in, is the different ways in which you can alleviate the pain of grief, but to say, well, gee, it's been a month, you should be over it by now. I mean, those are the worst kind of comments you can get from anybody. So always keep that person in your heart, and ultimately the best cure, if you will, or relief from grief is the knowing that you will see them again. That this is a very short time. We are eternal souls. Eternity is thousands and thousands of years, and we have got this 100 years, if probably much less for most people, of physicality. And that'll in the terms of eternity, that's a snap of the fingers, and then you will be with your loved one again. And what your loved ones want, and when in most readings, what they will come through is they want to see you enjoy the life that you have. Another analogy that I use is you're at an amusement park, you get on the Ferris wheel, you get in one of these baskets, and then your loved one gets in another basket, and it goes around and around and around, and then it stops. And your loved one gets off, and it's like, oh no, they're off. How can I enjoy the rest of the ride? Because they're not on the ride. Meanwhile, they're down there, they're waving up at you, going, hey, you know, we're fine, you know, we'll wait for you until you get off. And that's the message, that you have to enjoy the ride that you're on until you get off. And That's all I can say about that.
But you're listening to the gathering on Science of Life Radio. If you wanted to join in the discussion, the number here is 888-627-6008. Let's see. We have a question. Does grief block you from getting messages? And I guess they mean, you know, both personally and through a medium. I mean, we don't really know the answer to that, but we suspect that it could, you know, because instead of letting yourself relax and become a channel and be open to things, you may be all tight and wound up. And, you know, certainly being in a relaxed or an altered state of consciousness helps the process, and the grief could possibly prevent it. On the other hand, we've seen people in horrible grief at retreats and in other venues that get these wonderful evidential messages, you know, from mediums. So it's yes and no, you know. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I know that I don't want to say too much about the process, but when we've been in the room or with people who have, I'll just say what I'm rather than sound. Back when we were participants actively with the medium certification processes, and we would be around making sure all the technology was working, and we would, you know, see parts of the reading or overhear them, and we could often, or they would report back to us, oh, I didn't get anything. And we might have happened to have heard messages coming through, but the sitter was so determined because of their grief over a particular loss. That's all they wanted to hear, and really didn't hear what else was being delivered or conveyed to them, because they were just so focused through their grief of the loss that they just wanted.
If I'm smiling, it's because when you said the sitter really didn't hear, I'm reminded of Ethel, if you remember Ethel. I don't know if you were around that time, but I was witnessing the reading back in the day. We used to hold the certification process in my home, and the sitters used to be in different rooms, you know, on different workstations. And I happened to be in the same room as Ethel, and I was listening to the medium who was not, you know, who was online, but they were seeing each other. And the medium, because I knew something about Ethel's life, gave her deceased husband's exact name, his exact occupation, his exact mode of death. And Ethel kept saying, no, no. And I couldn't interfere in the process, but I wanted to scream, you know. I said, Ethel, why did you keep saying no? And I found out that she was mostly deaf. She couldn't hear. So the medium is giving this wonderful reading, and she's marking no to everything because she had no idea what he was saying. You know? So after that, I should have, fortunately it never happened again, but we should add a question to the application is, how's your hearing? Application, you know, and you made me laugh with the thinking about that. You're saying, you know, when you were witnessing that, and you know, the grief, you know, blocked them from hearing. So, yeah. You know, this was literally hearing, you know,
because we were privy to certain information about our sitters,
right?
That made no sense.
Yeah, it made no sense at all.
I'm guilty of that too. It's such a surreal experience when you go to a medium. And if you've never been there, it's really incredible.
If it's a good one.
If it's a good one, of course. But first of all, you go in, first you show up at a medium, you know you're going to go for communication. There's usually one person in particular that you really want to communicate with, and you've been talking to them all morning, saying, I'm going to the medium, you know, come in. And then you get to the medium, and somebody else comes in, and it throws you. I mean, it's, it, and you, and you, you don't realize right away because it's not matching with the person you wanted to hear. So you're sort of discounting what you're hearing. And it's, sometimes it's not until afterwards, which of course is why always we recommend that you record your readings. I know I used to record all the readings, and then you would go home, and afterwards, when you're calm and everything's not happening all at once, and you start to listen to the reading, and you go, "Oh, that's what they're talking about." So yeah, I mean that has definitely happened to me, that I had somebody I had no expectation of hearing from came through, and I mean, he was really funny. He was a funny guy in life, and he was funny also. And this was a place with two mediums. It was during a radio show, and two mediums were reading. And one medium who brought through this person who was talking to me, and I'm sort of scratching my head, not knowing who it was. And the other medium turns to me and goes, he's got the Sherlock Holmes hat on, you know, and he's saying, and then I realized when I listened back to it, who it was, my friend going, "Figure it out, Sherlock, it's me," you know. So yeah, it's a surreal experience, and you really should record it, because a lot of the stuff doesn't even make sense until weeks, months, or even years later.
Right. Let's see. When a medium says, "I feel a tightness in my chest or pain in my stomach," when they're communicating with spirit, how does that happen? Well, it's a good question. You know, how does a person in spirit imprint their voice on a recording device when they have no body? You know, mediums do say that. That's how they know. For instance, if they're bringing through somebody that passed from a heart after suffering a heart attack, they'll say, "Well, I feel a tightness in my chest." So somehow, the person in spirit is helping the medium by transferring that energy to you know, so the medium can feel it in their body. We don't know how that works, but it's done. Also, it's a reason why a lot of mediums have health issues, especially after doing it for a long time. It takes a toll on their body, you know, because they're getting all that. So you've certainly noticed that in readings, right? It's very common.
Yeah.
You know, the way I feel about it is, and it matches with signs as well. Again, when you shed your body and pass over, you become pure energy. And when your energy, pure energy, you can do things that energy does, like flicker the lights, because it's an electric current. You can mess with the electric current, or put a little thought in a bird's mind, because you know our when you talk about how can they make you feel tightness, well, you don't really feel tightness. When tightness happens, you feel it because you know, because the synapses in your nerves, which are little spaces where electricity flows, and if an electrical current flows through that nerve to the brain, your brain goes, "Oh, I've got a tightness." And so you're not, the medium isn't getting necessarily constricted, but they're getting that little synapse, the spirit's pushing that synapse that registers tightness. The same nerve that would register tightness, you put a little electric current through there, and the medium goes, "Oh, I feel tightness." So it's all electricity. It's all energy, as you said before. And that's how they do it. That's how they get their messages through. We have a medium who says she gets a little movie and on the side of her head from a spirit.
Right. That's a good explanation. Sometimes I dream of my deceased husband, but it doesn't feel like he's visiting me. Instead, we're doing something and we get into an argument. I'm concerned that he's angry with me. What are your thoughts? I mean, sometimes, sometimes not every dream is a visitation dream. So sometimes you may be remembering an argument, you know, that you had with your husband, and so that's projected in like a regular dream. I don't think, as Tom mentioned earlier, in readings we don't see hate or dislike, you know, coming through, because people have a different perspective. So I wouldn't be worried about that. I think you would just, your subconscious was bringing it to the forefront, but I don't, you know, it's not a visitation.
What we often, you know, when after our loved ones pass, we have a tendency to focus on negative events that we wish we had could relive, redo, do over. Those regrets probably manifest themselves in your dream at night, because that's what dreams are often. We, you know, dreams are complex. Sometimes it is a rehashing or trying to make sense of events that happened in our daytime experience. Not always, but sometimes. And so if you're dwelling on those, wish you hadn't had that, an argument, wish you hadn't disagreed, makes sense that they would be rehashed in your dream.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see, we have here, we occasionally hear stories of miraculous healings. How do these occur, and how come there are so few of them? We do hear, like medical doctors will say it's a spontaneous remission, you know, like it's typically, let's say, in a cancer case, you know, that they go from having stage 4 cancer to 0 without treatment. Nobody, there's no medical explanation for that, so we don't know. I mean, the spiritual explanations that we know of are, you know, psychokinesis, like the power of prayer.
Yeah.
Who are we to say that if you have a lot of people, you know, praying for you and sending you healing thoughts, that that didn't do the trick? Or who's to say that somebody in the spirit world, you know, has enough power, so to speak, you know, to, you know, to healing? As to why it doesn't happen more often, good question. You know, I don't know. There's so many people that need healing, but you do hear of cases. I mean, and maybe, I mean, I know people that are religious might say, you know, that was God, you know, that, you know, did the healing. So there's a lot of different, you know, possible explanations. Or maybe the person did it themselves, you know, just through positive thinking. So
I know the late Wayne Dyer spoke about that. I don't recall which of one of his books I had been reading, but he had, I guess, it being in the service and having to help some of the other servicemen. I don't know too much. I don't know much medical stuff. And I don't want to get too graphic with what I'm sort of recalling, but he had to assist his fellow servicemen. It was something like, I'll just say, it was like on their backside that they themselves couldn't see. He, of course, was helping and could see it all and was thinking, this has got to be the worst thing that could ever, you know, happen. And whether or not he actually started to develop his own bad case of whatever he was helping with, he, like, willed it away, according to his story. Just, this is not going to happen to me. And for anyone who has read whatever it was I was reading from Wayne, I may have gotten the details confused, but what he was attempting to do worked for him, willing it not to happen or not to progress so it could go away.
You know, Melissa, I enjoy whenever you want to say something graphic and then you think about it a little bit and try to, I can see you thinking of a way to present it without being too graphic, as opposed to Tom or myself, who might be a little bit. You're really good at that.
Thanks, Bob.
All right, so I mean, we have time for one more. In this world, we seem to have good and bad luck. Is there such a thing as good and bad luck in the next world? Well, you know, I mean, we think, so in the physical terms, we say bad luck. Lots of times that's, we lose money, or we get a physical ailment, or we have a setback, you know, but there's no money and there's no, there are no bodies and no physical ailments in the next world, you know. And then the same thing with good luck, you know, usually involves, you know, money or good fortune or sort of things that are important to us that we associate with good and bad luck here. I don't think that applies in the next realm.
I don't think so. I think, boy, there's so many thoughts about right now about this physical world and people's perspective on good and bad luck. I think your thoughts create your reality.
Often. Yeah, there's a lot to that. I know. I used to figure, there's an old blues song, if it wasn't for bad luck, I wouldn't have any luck at all. Right. And, born under a bad sign. And I always felt that, you know, just little things like, I see a parking spot, I'm going for it, and somebody pulls in just before I get there, you know. And it's like, I would say, well, that's just my luck. And then Melissa pointed out, which is true, that, you know, your intentions, your thoughts create your reality. So if you go through life, as I was, saying that I have bad luck, guess what? I'm going to have bad luck. Because I'm creating the bad luck by fostering it with that attitude. So, it's be careful what you think.
But it's a physical thing. I don't think I want to say not. It won't apply on the other side. Well, it won't apply on the other side because it won't be occurring on the other side.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's just a physical term. But you know, I think about what Tom said often, because like you know, I mean. I'm like a glass, you know, half empty.
Debbie, you're
so I mean, I've had a lot of bad luck, you know. Like, yeah. Sometimes I just think of myself sitting at the base of a tree, like that statue, looking up at a bird and saying, "Okay, go ahead, everybody else does," you know. But I've also had my share of, you know, of good fortune too. So I think there's balance, but I always wonder whether certain people seem to have, you know, more good luck than bad luck or vice versa. And then Tom, you know, also made me think that if you expect things to happen, you know, I've had a few like surgical procedures in my life and something always seems to go wrong, you know, like afterwards, and I go in like expecting that. So I just had this simple, you know, cataract surgery. People have cataract surgery every single day. It's like the most often performed surgery that there is, you know. So what could go wrong? So, you know, I had that attitude, something will go wrong. So I went back for a follow-up today, and you know, my eyes are still all inflamed from the surgery, and I'm having, you know, some other issues, and I'm like, okay, you know, here we go again. But like Tom said, did I bring that upon myself because I expected it? You know, so I gotta learn to stop doing that stuff. All right.
Remember the pendulum; it'll swing the other way.
Right. So that we've reached the end of our time. I'm going to read the Global Peace Prayer as we do at the end of the show every month. Let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to a fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment.
And I'd like to say our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to accept it.
Well, thank you. Good night, everyone, and we'll see you next time.
See you soon.